Counsel, good morning to you. This is the case of Brown versus Morello. And the court is appearing by WebEx as we speak. Very good. It appears that everybody is present. Counsel, we'll start with introductions from the court. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now by seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Stephanie Stacy.
Good morning. Good morning. Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik.
And John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Mr. Schlosser, are you with us here today?
I am, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Mr. Mahalo, are you with us here this morning?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. Good morning.
Did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did.
Thank you very much. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Schlosser. Then you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Andy Schlosser. I'm here today on behalf of Bernard Morello. This is an appeal from a judgment granted in the district court, in which the district court determined that Ms. Morello's property had been acquired by the appellee adverse possession. We contend that Mr. Morello presented sufficient facts at issue to survive the summary judgment. The papers are set out in the briefing. Three main issues that I want to address today. The first is that district court made an error in determining that the use of the property by appellee was exclusive. Second, that the appellee's use property was sufficiently notorious to put a reasonable property owner on notice that this was an adverse possession claim. And then third, there were some statements in an affidavit offered by Mr. Morello at the summary judgment hearing that we were improperly excluded on evidentiary ground. On the exclusive use issue, this court has obviously stated that if there are multiple users of the property, both the record owner and the adverse claimant, then there cannot be adverse possession. The claimant needs to show exclusive use. The court has also stated in prior opinions that the nature of that use depends upon the character and nature of the property at issue. In this case, we're dealing with essentially a 20-foot wide strip of ground next to Appley's house, right alongside of her house, between that and the street. And there are photos in the record that you can see of that. Being 20 feet wide, really there is very little use for this property beyond holding for investment, which is what Mr. Morello was doing. So his use of the property based on that character was essentially all he knew. And the record shows that he held it for investment. He had an agent that would inspect from time to time. Beyond that, there's not much to do with this property. Appley's use of the property was similarly limited in that the record shows she mowed the property, shoveled the sidewalk from snow, and it essentially was a vacant lot next to her her home. That use,
there also aver that she put up the retaining wall?
Yes, Your Honor. She did state that she constructed the retaining wall on the property, although there was some question as to when. The statement in the record was that it was more than 10 years, but we don't have anything more than that in there. We would contend that the retaining wall in itself is not enough, or at least that there is a fact issue whether that was intended to be exclusive use and whether that was sufficiently notorious to put
what is the fact issue?
The fact, do I believe, is nature of that use. So if it were a fence, for example, that enclosed the property such that it showed exclusion of other users, or if she had built an addition on site of her house that showed that she was taking that property for excluded use. You don't know with the retaining wall whether that was sufficiently notorious,
are those legal issues or fact issues?
I think it's a combination, Your Honor. Some of the fact issues are when in time that retaining was put in. As part of the affidavit that was excluded from Mr. Morello, he had statements that may have been installed by the city, or that he thought it was installed by the city. And that could be a fact issue since there was no permit that was ever issued. So therefore, was that sufficient to put him on notice?
Mr. Schlosser, isn't your argument with respect to the retaining wall that there are inferences both in favor of your client and against your client that could flow from that, the existence of that retaining wall, and that on summary judgment we have to look at the inferences in favor of your client? Now, if this were on a trial, you wouldn't be able to make that argument, right?
I think that's exactly right, and a better job of summarizing our argument than I was doing, Your Honor. We don't know how this will ultimately turn out, I would say, at trial, but we contend that Mr. Morello is entitled to get to that point to resolve the factual issues. There is not much of a record before you on the case, as you see, and for it seems, especially with the nature of an adverse possession being unfavored in the law, that the inferences, especially summary judgment and in an adverse possession case, would run to Mr. Morello.
Mr. Schlosser, what are the inferences that are favorable to your client?
I think the inferences are that the type of the property at issue here results in very little use. So therefore, his simply holding this property, having an agent inspect the property from time to time, is a use of the property, and therefore there was joint use, no exclusive use of the property. The inference that no permit having been pulled for the construction of this wall, that perhaps it was not installed by Appley, or there is a question there. And is that question whether that was sufficiently notorious then? Additionally, the use by Appley as far as mowing, snow removal, those all appear to be maintenance issues, which this court has previously said is not enough to create an adverse claim on the property.
Counsel, is there any evidence in our record that Mr. Morello had an agreement to maintain that property, to mow it?
An agreement with Appley or with
Correct.
The party?
Or with anybody, even the agent who came by periodically to check on things.
There is nothing in the record to indicate that, Justice.
Is there anything in the record that indicates that Mr. Morello or one of his agents ever mowed or maintained the property during the 10 years before suit?
No, there is nothing in the record to indicate that.
And it is lawn, is that correct?
It is. It is 20 feet wide. It is grassy strip. There is no fence or prop line that you would be able to really delineate between Mr. Morello's property and the Appley's property on this. But to those issues, there have been prior cases, and they're cited in our briefing, that simply mowing that lawn over the property line is not enough.
Is this case different in that, you know, it's not a case where your client was maintaining some of his yard and Appalee was maintaining some of her yard? The evidence is that the entirety of the property at issue was being maintained by Appalee, and you weren't mowing anything. This isn't a boundary line dispute. Does that make those cases distinguishable?
I don't think it does make it any distinguishable, make it distinguishable or any different, because you're always dealing a portion of property or property at dispute that may be maintained or used by a particular adverse claim. So whether that was 5 feet of this property or 20 feet of this property, I think the legal arguments are the same on that, as to whether the disputed property was exclusively used, was it generally notorious? And regardless of the size of that property, if Appalee was not using it in a way to meet the adverse possession requirements, then her argument must fail on that.
Is there any significance that this is urban property?
I don't think there's any significance to that, Your Honor. I think this court has previously looked at some of the statutes on platting, and that not necessarily make a difference or apply to prevent first possession. But I don't think it necessarily changes the legal arguments in that either.
Mr. Schlosser, I know you've tried to answer this and maybe have answered this already, but just what use was your client making of this property?
The use was limited to holding for investment and periodic inspection, Your Honor. That is really all there was. You would also contend that that's essentially all that this property was useful for as an investment owner.
Do you have any authority where courts have recognized holding property for investment as sufficient use to deny adverse possession?
I have not seen that, Your Honor, although I would cite the court to some of the cases, very limited use. For example, the Nice that's cited in our brief, there was a property on the side of a cornfield, and the record owner said that 1 to 2 times a year he may have parked equipment on that piece of property for a limited period. The adverse claimant said never saw anyone parking equipment there. And the only other use stated was when he was farming the cornfield, he may have crossed that property as he was turning the equipment around. And that would be very limited use, yet that was sufficient to make a fact issue in the case. And we would submit that similar here.
What would prevent every record owner in every adverse possession case from saying, well, I'm holding it for investment?
I think it does depend upon the character of the property. So if you have a full-size lot, that analysis may be different, where you'd potentially build a home on it. These small postage stamp, if you will, properties that are not suitable for anything other than holding for investment, I think does change the analysis on it. And I think that's part of the fact issue that needs to be considered and why this case should proceed past summary judgment.
Counsel, do we have any evidence from Mr. Morello's agent about the inspection of the property and when he did it and what he saw?
There is nothing in the record to indicate that, other than a statement that his agent periodically inspected the property.
Would that be hearsay? Is that hearsay? Because that comes from Mr. Morello's affidavit himself. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Did the court allow that, or did the court strike that paragraph?
I believe the statement that he had an agent that inspected was admitted into evidence, but it was a statement that it was excluded evidence that his agent never informed him of any abuse of the property. And then we would submit was not hearsay because it was simply a report. There was no substance, no statement being made.
So what direct knowledge does Mr. Morello have of the use of this property over the last 10 years?
It would only be through his agent, Your Honor. Mr. Morello lives in Texas, so he is not present, does not obviously live on the property as there's nothing there. So he relies on agent for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schlosser. Mr. Mahalo, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Christopher A. Mahalo with the Milton R. Abrams Legal Clinic at Creighton University. I represent the appellee, Lily Brown. In this case, the trial court properly determined that Ms. Brown, on summary judgment, had established all five elements of adverse possession. The facts weren't covered quite chronologically, so I'll address those first before moving into argument. Ms. Brown owned this property since 1972. During the nearly 38 years of her ownership, there was a small strip of land between her home and North 30th Street. This strip of land is relatively significant. While it was 20.7 feet wide, it was 120 feet long as well. During her entire ownership of the parcel, she believed that she owned everything from her house to North 30th Street. During the 38 years that she owned it, she not only cut the grass, she also cleared the sidewalk, and most significantly, she did build a retaining wall that covered most of the 120 foot length of the property. There is a picture of the retaining wall that is, I'd like to direct the court's attention to. It's in Exhibit 1, Sub-Exhibit C. And I think that shows just that this is not a small retaining wall. This is a relatively big one. Mr. Morell,
does the record, counsel, does the record tell us when the wall was built?
It tells us that the wall was built more than 10 years ago. And it states by her, Ms. Brown, that she did, or someone with her, built that wall.
And how does that relate to when Mr. Morello apparently purchased the property?
Mr. Morello purchased the property in 1996. She knows that she built it more than 10 years ago. There's not much evidence before them, but she knows that she built it, and it was at least 10 years ago from her affidavit. Mr. Morello, by his own admission, was an absentee owner of this parcel of land. He lives in Texas, and his affidavit stated that he hired somebody to inspect and maintain this parcel of land. Ms. Brown, during the entire ownership of land, never saw anyone else come to the land, and she was never notified that this strip of land wasn't hers. Before moving more into argument, I just want to bring the court's attention to where we are at in this proceeding. So Ms. Brown, as the moving party for summary judgment, she had the burden to establish a prima facie case that she was entitled to judgment as a matter of law. The burden then shifted to Mr. Morello, and he had to show that there was a material issue of fact that prevented the court from ruling Ms. Brown's favor. As recently as last year, this court has noted that conclusions based on speculation, guess, conjecture, or choice of possibilities don't create an issue of material fact. Rather, there has to be an evidence in the facts that the fact finder won't be engaging in guesswork. And I think that that's part of the issue with the allegations in Mr. Morello's affidavit. Of the five elements related to adverse possession, only two are at issue here. The first is exclusive control, and the second is notorious. Ms. Brown used this piece of property for everything that she could. Unable to establish exclusive control, it doesn't have to be 24-hour use of the property. It doesn't have to be a complete enclosure over the property, like building a fence around it. It just has to be some sort of control that shows that she had control over it. Furthermore, regardless of where
it is. How does payment of taxes, if anything, figure into the exclusive element?
Payment of the taxes can be a consideration, but it's not outcome determinative. And the court said that in the past, that it can be considered. I think in this case, related to the exclusivity of it, this is such a small parcel. It had previously been purchased by Mr. Morello related to tax certificates that I don't think it necessarily weighs in either favor. And it definitely doesn't create an issue of material fact. Regardless of where the court is at in the proceeding, if it's a summary judgment or if it's after trial, if there's any competing use over the land, then the court can't grant adverse possession. I think in this case, however, what Ms. Brown did for the land was exclusive. She did everything she possibly could for this small strip of land. She maintained the grass, she cleared the sidewalk of snow, and furthermore, she built that retaining wall, which shouldn't be diminished because there's no evidence in the record to diminish it. In regards to notorious, the court has stated
back to exclusive for just a second. If the record on summary judgment suggests that Mr. Morello had an agent who came by periodically to inspect the property, is that a competing use?
Thank you, Your Honor. The record doesn't establish that his agent actually ever came to the property. His affidavit states that he engaged an agent to come and inspect the property, but I think that there is a significant difference between having someone be engaged to do it and actually having them carry out the acts. So I think that's a pretty significant deficiency in his evidence that was adduced, and I don't think that there's any evidence that suggests that his agent actually did anything to the land. In regards to inspection, what that inspection would entail, this is observable through 30th Street. So I don't think that driving past the land, if his agent ever did that, would be sufficient either to ruin the exclusivity provision. Moving on to the notorious use of the land, the court stated that acts must be sufficient to put a person on notice that the parcel of land is being used adversely. And the court has stated that acts of routine yard maintenance without more is insufficient. But when you have something more, so if it's yard maintenance plus something else, that makes it sufficient to establish adverse possession. This case is most like Wanha versus Long, where there were competing residential property owners. One of the property owners seeded the grass consistently, but they also built a sidewalk. Here, we can establish that Ms. Brown was really the only one doing anything with this parcel of land. Grass doesn't cut itself, sidewalks don't clear themselves, and walls certainly don't build themselves here. In regards to some of the issues, the evidentiary issues that were touched upon but not addressed directly, I'd first like to address the issue about the city's permit. The court...
I'm sorry, I want to take you back to the wall for a minute. What is the state of the record as to whether or not your client built the wall or whether or not the city might have built the wall?
The evidence is clear. My client said that she built the wall. There really isn't an issue of fact regarding who built the wall. Mr. Morello, in his affidavit, attempts to create an issue of fact. But this paragraph is found in paragraph 6, and it states that I believed the retaining wall was built by the city of Omaha, and then it states that he did some sort of inspection related to the city permit. This paragraph was properly excluded, though, by the trial court because it was found to be speculative. And I think this also goes to the issue that I touched upon earlier, where his belief isn't necessarily relevant to create an issue of material fact. Is a 2014
what
case.
What about he appears to have said he did check the record and there was no permit to build the wall? What's the relevance of that?
I don't think it establishes that my client didn't build the wall. She said she did. And even if she didn't follow the correct permit requirements of building the wall, that doesn't necessarily create an issue of material fact. I think the trial court was correct in ruling that paragraph was not admitted. The only other paragraph that the court left out was, based on hearsay exceptions, whether or not he ever received any, Mr. Morello ever received any reports from his agent. And I think that the court properly excluded that because that would have been hearsay in regards to what his agent did or didn't say to, or what his agent said to him over the phone is hearsay and just not admissible for purposes. Even if it was admissible though, I don't think it necessarily creates an issue of material fact because it's again, conclusion language where it's being summarized on what his agent had seen. We respectfully ask that the court affirm the trial court's ruling in favor of Ms. Brown for summary judgment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, thank you both for participating today by WebEx. And you are excused, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Claussen versus LOL Investments, LLC.